CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I like how Andy said at one point, I think it was during FFL, he's like, at this point, I'd rather just die.
Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast here.
Been seeing you guys' podcast have kind of blown up here recently, so glad to get on.
It's Tuesday, December 13th, and the Take Bowl of 2022 is thankfully finally behind us. We will get to that one in just a minute. And, of course, the waiver wire. But we got some news to get through, and joining me to do that is the czar of the Superflex, Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
I'll take czar. I made some really bad Superflex choices this week, so I probably can't actually wear that title authentically. I made some you know, Tyler Huntley decisions that were regrettable in hindsight.
Well,
I had people telling me that I should go Brock Purdy over say a Tyler Huntley. Did I listen? No, I didn't listen.
Well, no. Well, that's a perfect transition for me to take a victory lap here, because in my Superflex Dynasty League, I think I told you this, you and Dalton on the pod, that I got Brock Purdy off the waiver wire, and he was huge with the CMC stack in me beating Rich Rebar, who we're actually having on the show later this week, which is great. It's nice to have for him to come here the week after I beat him in our Dynasty League. That's great stuff. So look forward for Rich on the show later this week. But yeah, so I made some great Superflex decisions this week, so maybe I'll take the czar of the Superflex title
but
this all beautifully transitions right into our first piece of news. NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reports that BCB himself, Brock Purdy, will undergo an MRI on an oblique injury. The 49ers seem optimistic that Purdy's injury won't be a major issue, Andy. Let's freaking hope so, because I'm about to just roll Brock Purdy out over Aaron Rodgers in my Dynasty Superflex spot this week against the Seattle Seahawks on Thursday night. So it's a pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah, it didn't seem to be, what do I know? But it didn't seem to be troubling him that much after the game. He actually, gave the press conference after the game as usual. Who would miss that opportunity coming off the game that he had against Tom Brady? What a story.
I know.
Each NFL season is obviously weird and unpredictable in its own way. I can't off the top of my head remember a story that was this delightful that surprised me this much. I mean, I'll repeat, we're 15 months removed from Brock Purdy getting yanked from the Iowa Hawkeye defeat because he couldn't stop throwing interceptions, and now they're pulling him early in a just pummeling of the freaking Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady. That was just incredible.
I feel like we didn't focus on that enough last night with Scott, that they pulled Brock Purdy had to get pulled out of the game. They yanked the entire national market off the TV. They're like, hey, we can't let you see Tom Brady get his ass beat by Brock Purdy anymore. Okay. We gotta head you over to Sam Darnold and Geno Smith just throwing the pigskin around here on this other game. So it was that bad, that beatdown that they gave the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I mean, yeah, this guy Brock Purdy, just fresh faced, looking young as hell. Last pick in the draft. I mean, I think probably, Andy, because we have seen Kyle Shanahan do this with goofball quarterbacks before. I mean, your favorite player, Nick Mullins, your actual favorite player, CJ Beathard, you know, these guys are all up there in terms of like yards per attempt. Talked about that on the show last night, but yeah, and that's your favorite. I know that's your favorite stat. Nick Mullins yards per attempt, like love this it. Much in his first.
Can't set. Get
you absolutely love that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I will say this about Brock Purdy. Like, the stats are great, whatever. The eye test really almost was more important than the stats for Brock Purdy, especially because they just ran the offense with this guy. Like, there wasn't any sort of like, all right, and you know, maybe that's a statement on Jimmy G, whatever. You can have the 500th Jimmy G debate right after you get done with the 300th Jared Goff debate, whatever. But they just basically ran the same offense, all the same motions, all the same checks, all the same adjustments. And really, Purdy had the one throw that got called back, the interception that got called back from a defensive holding that, I mean, didn't affect his decision at all. But other than that, like, he just looked like a guy that has been running this offense for years.
Yeah, total credit to him, right? Obviously, the coaching staff has done a wonderful job with him, but this is, you know, an absolute tribute to the work habits that he has, that he's got himself to this point where he can just drive the offense as soon as he was asked to come onto the field against a pretty solid opponent a couple weeks ago. And then again, first NFL start, this is what we get. There were, you know, maybe there were some moments where it seemed a little frenetic, but everything worked, right? He's got enough mobility, more mobility surely than Jimmy Garoppolo. That's an aspect to his game. Not that he's like some dual threat guy necessarily, but he'll take off and run and he can do some stuff. And the aggressiveness of some of those throws. I mean, it's just a great game. I don't have anything bad to say about it. Like it is wonderful that this is happening. It is pretty wild that this is happening. The shot of his dad, like, kind of got me, you know. It's a really nice story.
Yeah, especially when we had to hear about 50 times in the pregame that Tom Brady's from the Bay Area. You know, he's a San Francisco fan growing up and all that. And then like, oh yeah, actually, you know, it's a way, way cooler story than hearing about how Tom Brady rooted for the 49ers for the billionth time in his career. Is like this guy, Brock Purdy's dad, actually losing it in the stands. That was way cool to see. Love that. Hopefully Brock can keep it up. Again, it sounds like this injury is not a major deal. You know, Austin Eckler has told us on the show before that, like, you typically don't feel those things because of adrenaline until the next day. So that kind of makes sense. God, we're going to talk about a guy in a minute. I can't imagine how he's feeling today. But, you know, yeah, Brock Purdy sounds like he'll be okay for the Thursday night game against the Seahawks. And, you know, Lord Podcast already planting seeds in my brain after the show late last night about like, hey, got to start thinking about what if Brock Purdy is like really good. Like, then they can let Jimmy Garoppolo walk, and then we got a Purdy Trey Lance battle in training camp next year. A lot of stuff to consider. Also worth considering that Debo Samuel has a left ankle injury. He's most likely. I don't know if we even see Debo again the rest of the season. I mean, the 49ers have a 98% chance to make the playoffs according to 538, 92% chance to win the division. High ankle sprain, seems like we don't see Debo the rest of the way.
Yeah, it sure seems like a high ankle sprain, and he was obviously in a fair amount of pain. I hate to tell you to drop Debo Samuel, but we're probably at a point in the season where, I mean, the likelihood of him making it back within the next 3 weeks just seems so low to me. It's really unfortunate. For like the flip side, if you've got Purdy, this is a little bit of a ding, but he's still the guy who's throwing a Brandon Ayuk. He's got George Kittle. He's got Christian McCaffrey. Like they certainly have the weapons to cover for an absence like this.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the 49ers if they weren't dealing with like a major injury. They also put a defensive lineman on season-ending IR this morning with an ACL injury. Again, very, very typical San Francisco 49ers things. But I mean, I really wish they wouldn't run Debo up the middle. I really wish they'd kind of stop doing that. But then again, I say that, but their rushing play with him was their first touchdown, you know? So it's tough. It's a tough spot there. But yeah, we'll see. I don't think we see Debo the rest of the season. The guy I mentioned who I can't imagine how he is feeling this morning is Mike White. Jets head coach Robert Saleh said that Mike White is day to day with a rib injury. Our old colleague and friend Kimberly Martin posted a video of him on her Instagram of him walking out of, and it's probably on Twitter too, like on the, like walking out off the field or walking through the tunnel or whatever. And that guy was just like, in so much pain, day to day with the rib injury. We'll see. We really just, I mean, it's crazy that we're talking about like, man, Brock Purdy keeping the 49ers offense afloat. Mike White, we can't lose this guy from the Jets offense, but that's kind of how it feels.
Oh, it is absolutely how it feels. The guy's averaging 317 passing yards per game. Heroic effort returning to that game multiple times, right? The shot from Milano just seemed like it was going to be a season ender. That seemed like multiple ribs. How on earth is he still walking? So that was really impressive that he came back. And obviously, you know, we've got the fantasy value of multiple entirely relevant Jets receivers, depending on this. We've talked at length about the difference between Garrett Wilson with White and Flacco and with anybody else, right, with Zach Wilson. So, we just saw Elijah Moore see 10 targets in this one. He's a thing again. All of this depends on the health of Mike White, so hopefully he's good to go.
And the schedule is pretty delicious for the Jets the next 3 weeks.
Super friendly.
I know the Lions run defense especially has gotten better. I mean, they've shut down some big, big name backs of late, but you know, they get the Lions this week, then the Jags, the Seahawks. Like, that should be, it should be a print fest for the Jets receivers and stuff going forward. Corey Davis plays the concussion protocol. I know we'll talk about Elijah Moore a little bit later, but it should be great. We just have to have Mike White out there. I know the stats are still good with Garrett Wilson and Joe Flacco, but Andy, I mean, Joe Flacco against the Bills, good defense, but he looked like he was ready to be down there in Florida with the Treviso babes a few times when we saw him on. We saw him against the Bills.
He should be their next guest speaker. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Maybe we can get him for the Zoom next year, the 45-minute Zoom Q&A. All right. The Falcons have made it official. They've announced that Desmond Ridder is their new starting quarterback. Arthur Smith did say this is a performance-based elevation for Ridder and a performance-based demotion for Marcus Mariota, but also added that Mariota is going on IR with a knee injury. So looks like we'll get Desmond Ridder the rest of the way. How are you feeling? I know we haven't seen Ridder in the NFL. I know there are some folks that really love Desmond Ridder as a prospect. How are we feeling about this guy taking the reins for an Atlanta offense? It does have some guys we like.
Yeah, this is maybe not even damning with faint praise, but it can't get a whole lot worse than it was, right? Volume was really low, and Mariota was almost every game. There was a game-altering turnover, right? Like, he was basically a turnover machine. So if Ridder can just not be that guy, and they continue to do what they're they just do what they're doing without the. You know, but fourth quarter turnover that flips everything and the early turnover that, you know, doesn't need to happen. And maybe that's asking a lot, actually. He's a rookie. It's not like we're talking about some can't miss first rounder or anything like that, but interested to see him. He's got at least one great weapon at his disposal, and he's got a great run game to lean on. So should be fun. I wouldn't do anything with him in fantasy. Outside of Superflex, I don't think he's particularly relevant. But he, if there is a future quarterback of the Atlanta Falcons on the roster right now, it's this guy. It's not Marcus Mariota.
And it's not like the schedule is, just a clear runway for the Falcons. They get the Saints this week. Their defense is not as good as it should be, but is okay. Then they get the Ravens. They can certainly make life miserable for a young quarterback. They get the Cardinals. That's a good one on January 1st, but still. So it's sort of middle of the road there schedule-wise for the
Falcons. Saints are actually, like, last two games, they've only given up like 30 points over their last two games, right? They've been playing a little bit more like the Saints defense. They'll get after a passer. They haven't been turning anybody over. And I don't, like, normally you'd say, okay, here's a rookie stepping in. We probably want to stream a defense against him. But I don't know, like, we also want to chase pass attempts when we're streaming defenses, right? And I don't, right. It's not like I think Ridder is going to put the ball in the air more than 25 times.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think they'll remain pretty run heavy. And just from him, his own fantasy stock, he runs a little bit. He's a little bit of an athletic guy. So I think that just should make the offense more intriguing. Yeah, Mariota was just, he was a disaster. He was the worst combination of not like a steady, accurate game manager and also turnover prone. Like, you got to be at least Jimmy Garoppolo. If you're going to be Jimmy's more turnover prone than people give him credit for. Like, he's capable of making that back-breaking mistake, but at least he's like he's a high on target thrower. He's pretty accurate. Like, Mariota was not that. I think I've said this before, but Mariota is probably like outside of the like hilariously bad performances of Baker Mayfield and Zach Wilson, like, he was probably the worst starting quarterback in the NFL this year. So tough scene.
I would agree with that.
The Falcons were not the only NFC South team that made a quarterback announcement today. Dennis Allen said coming out of the bye, Andy Dalton is still a starting quarterback for this week's game against Atlanta. I mean, I know people are all like, there's definitely some segments of Twitter, a lot of Saints fans too, that are like kind of up in arms about the fact that they won't turn back to Jameis Winston. But for me, Andy, I'm like, who cares? Like, Jameis is not going to be good for this team. Like, Andy Dalton is not that good, but like, I don't think he's actually been a disaster or anything like that. They just don't win games. But I'm not 100% sure that's like Andy Dalton's fault, even though he is Andy Dalton.
Yeah, it is impossible to say that the difference between Andy Dalton and Jameis Winston, whatever it is, elevates the Saints into like a contender for anything meaningful, right? Like, this is just, you know, these are two roughly identical objects and we're talking about replacing one with the other. I don't think it makes a lot of difference.
Yeah, and it doesn't make a difference from a fantasy perspective either. Like, no. I think Andy Dalton's more than good enough for Chris Olave to do what he's doing right now. And he's, there's always this theoretical ceiling with Jameis Winston, but do you really want Jameis Winston out there throwing to like a bunch of tight ends like they have right now? Like, you're not going to throw to Alvin Kamara. How do you feel about the Kamara thing now that we're talking about it? Just because like we talked about this with Scott on FFL that he has an unbelievable schedule here to end the year. Obviously, it starts with the Falcons this week, and then he gets the Browns and the Eagles. Like, I know the Eagles have done a lot to beef up that run defense, but still, it's you know, on the season, it's been bad, and it doesn't get much better than the Falcons and the Browns.
Just, right.
This offense should be really good to end the season, but it's not been great so far.
It feels like a million years ago, but there was a stretch in the middle of the season where, you know, and I realized that Alvin Kamara has been a little light on touchdowns this year, but he was piling up yardage for a little while before this recent spell. So can he get that back against Atlanta and Cleveland? I would certainly hope so. That's probably, you know, as you were discussing Jameis and Dalton, maybe that's the one thing that that sort of tilts this in Dalton's favor, is that he has been a little bit more aggressive at targeting Kamara as a receiving threat, right? Like, Jameis, whatever you think of him, is looking downfield, right? Like, Jameis wants to hit home runs a lot of the time, and he's not necessarily the guy who's you know, elevates your screen game, the guy who's looking for, you know, the shortest possible route to Kamara that turns into a big game. So I think Andy Dalton's a little bit better for Alvin Kamara. So that, you know, the edge to Dalton there, I guess.
Whoop-de-doo. Adam Schefter reports that DJ Moore is day-to-day with the knee sprain that he got imaging on. It's not considered significant, according to DJ Moore himself. DJ had no catches against the Seahawks, which was pretty troubling. Now, he left the game late, though, so I don't know that this injury had anything to do with it. But yeah, frustrating season for DJ Moore. Now he's got this knee sprain here to the end of it.
Yeah, the injury occurred while he was run blocking. I mean, his whole day was spent either running the ball or run blocking, right? Like, they pretty clearly wanted to just, if they could have run the ball 60 times against Seattle, they would have done it. That was it was fantastic. Like, it was a super impressive game, right? They got three running backs involved. Not exactly
39 carries between Foreman, Hubbard, and Blackshear. I mean, it was absurd. And that is, by the way, like, that's what Steve Wilks wants them to be doing. They want to run the
and it's something we'll bring up again as we get into some pickups. But, like, you know, I was looking at Chuba Hubbard today. He touched the ball almost every time he was on the field. Like, there was no mystery to what Carolina was doing. Like, Hubbard had 17 touches and 23 snaps. Like, there's no misdirection there. There's no confusion. Like, we're going to run the ball between the tackles and you're going to have to stop this.
With how conservative the Panthers offense is right now, obviously the Falcons offense, and frankly, even the Bucks and the Saints, like, these NFC South games, and there's only two, the Panthers and the Bucks play each other, the Panthers and the Saints play each other. These games should be like done in, you know, like 2 hours. These games should know, like, if any of these push 3 hour like length of time, it would be an upset. They just want to get out of the season just as much as we want them to get out of the season at this point.
Yeah, they should be as close to like the 1 hour condensed game that you can get on NFL.com as possible, right?
What a beauty. What a beauty. Thank you, NFC South, for that. If nothing else this year, thank you for that. NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reports that Tyler Boyd, his finger, could miss a week or two with that injury. T Higgins is also dealing with the hamstring. Zach Taylor said that T Higgins, quote, could play, but ultimately we didn't want him out there in reference to his troubling status on Sunday. I definitely took a T. Higgins zero in one league, and I lost a close game because of it. So that was tough, but is what it is. Definitely a little bit of a problem here with these wide receivers in the Bengals offense right now.
Oh, that doesn't sound like a total endorsement of Trent Taylor and Trenton Irwin.
Trenton Irwin, and... who I only found out existed probably 3 weeks ago when I was like, who's this long haired fellow that's not Hayden Hurst? Yeah. Who's this long haired white guy that's not Hayden Hurst catching passes over here? It's Trenton Irwin. Let me tell you what, don't have an RP chart ready to roll on Trenton Irwin. I'll tell you that.
That might be exactly what I said. I think I was watching it. I was like, who is Imposter Hurst? What is going on here? Is that guy? Yeah, Hurst also dinged right now. So a pretty heavily damaged team. But man, they got a healthy Jamar Chase right now, and he's looked awesome the last 2 weeks. So that's been plenty fun. I actually had a couple of people reach out to me on Twitter who asked, like, what is Yahoo doing about this T. Higgins situation? As if people who started him should be given some sort of compensation or a do-over or something like that. Like, I get it. You're upset, but like, this stuff happens and it's bad. And now you have an anecdote that, you know, the rest of us have accrued plenty of those over the years. Yeah, it's terrible. But like, injuries are just such a huge part of the game.
I can't even with what you just said about
Two separate people asked me versions of that question, like this is some commissioner dilemma, or as if somebody should be allowed to retroactively like start a different receiver. I get it. If any of us would have known that T. Higgins was a possibility to just simply be shelved all game, it's just terrible luck, but that is a fact of life in the NFL.
Yeah, this is the game you play. Like we've said many times on the show recently, if you think these injury reports are like a biblical document, infallible document, they're not, because everybody would be listed on the injury report. At this point, I'd be listed on the injury report. My knee's not feeling so great. You know, these cold months here in Los Angeles can be a break.
But you're gutting it out, man.
Oh yeah, I'm gutting it out right here in my podcast chair. 5 days a week, baby. I'll be right here. All right. Last thing, Ravens coach John Harbaugh said to Tyler Huntley, quote, seems good to me when asked about his status for week 15. Okay, I mean, I guess he's in the concussion protocol. Apparently he can say the months backwards or whatever Harbaugh was talking about today. He seems like he's confident. Old John Harbaugh is confident that Huntley will be rolling out there in week 15. I'm not as confident, but we'll see.
Yeah, this, of course, is not at all how the concussion protocol works. You know, it's not designed so that as long as your head coach says, seems good to me, you're able to play. That's maybe how football worked in like 1975, but that is not how it works today. So I do hope Huntley makes it back because, we talked about it last week. Last year, Huntley was like a very bankable 50 rushing yards and 200 passing yards, and is a completely credible replacement for Lamar Jackson. But, you know, it's the concussion protocol and this is 2022, and I would not necessarily expect to see him out there.
Yeah, I guess the Mark Andrews, Tyler Huntley split bros will be able to write this one off because Huntley left the game early, but he did only have 2 for 17 and wasn't doing anything when Tyler Huntley was in there. But again, I guess they'll be able to say in games that Tyler Huntley, you know, started and finished or whatever, you know, the splits bros will still be ready to split.
It's going to be that played 75% of the snaps, played 60% of the snaps, whatever. Yeah.
There it is. That's a good one, man. When you start splitting the splits, that's when you know you're in some high quality. You're in some high tier, like well elevated, reached nirvana type fantasy stuff.
Totally not cherry picking, not one bit. No.
That's beautiful stuff. All right. Speaking of takes, speaking of big time narratives and elevated analysis, let's talk about Chargers 23, Dolphins 17. We'll get into the Chargers part of this. But we'll start with the Dolphins here, man, because it's pretty funny that, again, I keep calling it the Take Bowl. Dalton called it the Acho Bowl. You know, the fact that there was this big discussion about, is Justin Herbert overrated? Is Tua better than Justin Herbert? If you told a human being, or let's just say an alien from another planet that has no idea about football, is not engaged in our stupid Twitter culture wars over these two quarterbacks for the past however long it's been going on, if you told them this is a football game and these two quarterbacks were highly debated heading into this game, they'd think you were crazy. Because Tua, I mean, It went about as bad as it possibly could have been. At one point, he was 3 for 17. He finishes 10 for 28. And his one big passing touchdown came. There was one play with Tyreek Hill. But for the most part, the big play was like a fumble recovery touchdown with Tyreek Hill there. So pretty rough debut, pretty rough showing here for the Dolphins offense.
I will say right off the bat, I watched this game at the bar. So if I get some things wrong, it's Brad Evans' fault. It's and
fair
a
enough.
Little bit my own. But watch this one at the bar.
Blame it all on Brad. That's fine.
That's fair. It sure seemed like the Chargers were successfully doing some of the things that we'd seen the week before against Tua, right? Like making the middle of the field really congested and causing confusion, dropping guys back at the snap of the football in a way that obviously caused Tua to delay a beat and sometimes throw it into a crowd. He certainly risks some interceptions. He's pretty lucky to come out of that game without several more interceptions. Just caused delays in the offense. Couldn't keep anything on schedule when you can't complete a pass. And they're really challenging Tua right now. And I see no reason why this shouldn't be the case moving forward until he proves he can do it successfully and read it quickly. Like really challenging him to complete throws outside the numbers, things that have not been like the hallmarks of this offense to this point in the season. But he also just missed some stuff. I mean, there were big opportunities. As somebody who had placed a prop bet on, which eventually paid off on Tyreek Hill longest reception of 29 and a half yards, I kept waiting for the big play, and they were there to be had, and he missed a lot of them. So it was a combination of some things that the Chargers were doing, and then Tua just misfiring on some throws that he's hit all year. We also like really quiet Jaylen Waddle day. And Waddle had, I'm watching this game at the bar. I don't know what was said by the broadcast team, but there was a deep shot to Waddle late in the game that seemed like it's like whistled right past his ear and he wasn't ready for it, right? That seemed like it was a very catchable ball. So like he was not exactly covered in glory after this one either.
Yeah, fair enough. I think all your assessments about Tua are pretty accurate. No tequila damage takes there from you, Andy. I wrote in my care don't care recap piece that, like, I actually don't even really care at this point like what the Dolphins have done prior to week 13, because that's great, your first punch, your first move, awesome. If you hit teams with that, fantastic, we know you're going to be great. But this is when teams and offenses especially really show you who they are and what they're made of. Like, what can, like, when you've got to play left-handed, when you have to land a counterpunch, like, what is it and can you land that? And now I think Mike McDaniel, I think Tua, all of these guys will be tested by defenses, because a lot was made of like the physical press coverage they played on the outside. And I had somebody ask me in the middle of the game, well, like, what are Tyreek and Jaylen Waddle like bad against press coverage? No, those guys, especially Tyreek Hill, has been an incredible press coverage beater basically since he hit the NFL field, even when he was doing it in like limited looks as a gadget guy as a rookie. He's an unbelievable technician off the line of scrimmage. And obviously, once he gets you free from the line, we saw it last night and we saw it against 49ers. Like, you will get embarrassed at least once per game. You will get absolutely like laughed out of the film room by whatever you did on Tyreek Hill on that one rep. But it's one play, one or two plays. Like, they can score very quickly like that, and to the point that's like, you better build a big lead on the other side, which the Chargers didn't 100% do. Missed a couple opportunities here and there. I'm sure we'll talk about that a lot with Austin. He loves talking about missed opportunities, that guy. I was so thankful when he punched in that fourth down goal line score. I was like, oh, please, 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 just punch in the goal line score.
Yeah.
And he did, thankfully. But I think the Dolphins right now at this point, teams are going to play them like that. They're going to bring the robber safety down after showing two high looks. They're going to drop somebody back there. Like, and I think this is all comes back to Tua. And like, obviously, he really trusts this offense. And I would, too, with Mike McDaniel. But they're both going to have to adjust a little bit. And it's not unlike sort of, and it's very early to say this, and I'm not saying that this relationship will end like the Rams, McVay and Goff relationship did, but there were several times throughout the McVay Goff years that they had to come up with a counterpunch. And sometimes it was like, let's take let's take things off Jared Goff's plate, obviously. Let's do less and less with him. Let's simplify the offense. Let's make it super constricted, super tight, to the point that it was just that short little box over the middle. I'm not saying that that's how this is going to go with Tua, or again, that in a few years, Tua will get publicly dumped like Jared Goff did in such a harsh, vicious way in some back channel Cabo thing or whatever with a veteran quarterback. That's not what I'm saying. But again, we saw in a similar dynamic there where quarterback was struggling. Offensive play caller comes in with a lot of creative ideas, immediately elevates this guy, and was doing a lot of the heavy lifting. I feel like we're seeing that a little bit now with Mike McDaniel and Tua, and it will just be interesting to see how that goes going forward.
And now you've got Buffalo like on a short week.
Right.
There's almost no way this goes well, right? Like I was talking about this a bit this morning. I haven't ranked for week 15 yet. I can't imagine I'm going to have Tua in the top 12, and he's been parked there for me basically all year. Certainly since that Ravens game, he's almost unplayable against Buffalo, like given the way things have gone these past couple weeks and what we can reasonably expect Buffalo to do. And, you know, again, what like a short week for those teams, really, really tough spot for them.
Oh, man, we have not a stupid party. Love these folks. Love my wife. Love having plans with friends. We have a holiday cookie party to go to on Saturday night at 5:15 kickoff Pacific between the Dolphins and the Bills. Oh, man. I really don't want to be that guy, but that's a tough one. So anyways, love my friends. Love seeing folks. Love the holiday season. But that's where my mind just went. But yeah, no, I agree. Like, you know, not a friendly matchup there for the Dolphins. And then they get the Packers. That's great. They get the Patriots and the Jets. But that test against Buffalo is going to be a big one for Tua. And I don't know how you would play Tua with any confidence there. You're obviously going to play Tyreek. You're probably still going to end up playing Jalen Waddle. But the running backs too, like, you know, Raheem Mostert, 11 carries, 37 yards. The Chargers defense just had this was a great, in a sort of backed in the corner game plan moment for Brandon Staley after he's taken a lot of public heat, and I think a lot of deserved public heat. This is a great defensive game plan he rolled out, and obviously Jeff Wilson also gets hurt in this game too.
Yeah, we pretty clearly learned that the Miami offense was gonna tilt back toward the run game anyway. Was gonna tilt back toward Jeff Wilson. Stuck with him after a fumble too, right? And then he suffers the hip injury, just brutal. Looked like he tried to run it off on the sidelines and then eventually went on the cart. And now they're down to Raheem Mostert. So he's, as a player who's going to see the lion's share of the touches in the backfield, he's obviously somebody that is going to be elevated in the ranks a bit. But Wilson just a huge loss for a team that needs all the weapons it can get. And Tyreek like limps away from this game too. I assume that Tyreek is going to be good to go. It seems like a pretty mild low ankle situation, but even on, you know, the second touchdown, he was hopping on one leg into the end zone.
Yeah.
Didn't play the final drive, so that didn't look good. Waddle himself is just coming back from an ankle issue.
Yeah.
So they're beat up team.
Beat up team still have an 87% chance to make the playoffs according to 538. So that's great. Chargers, on the other hand, we can talk about them real quick. Turns out, Andy, it's a pretty big deal when you have your two starting wide receivers back out there. I mean, this is the crazy thing about the Herbert stuff, man. Bro, like, imagine, don't even imagine Tua without Tyreek and Jalen Waddle. We've seen that story before, right? Imagine if Joe Burrow lost both T. Higgins and Jamar Chase at the same time, and it was like Tyler Boyd and friggin' Trent Irwin out there, you know? And, like, by the way, that's basically what Herbert has been playing within Josh Palmer. And, like, Palmer, I'm not the biggest Palmer fan in the world, and he goes back to six targets and, like, oh, yeah, the offense looks great. This is the funny thing about fantasy, man. Like, and now I'm ranting. I don't mean to rant. But, like, this funny thing about fantasy is, like, wow, Josh Palmer, you know, like, is he a guy we got to start buying in Dynasty? He's had double-digit targets, and, you know, he's back this many games. Yeah, and the offense sucks. So what does that tell you? Now you get your guys back in there and the Chargers offense. You could still complain about the structure and stuff like that. There's definitely some nits to pick, but you get Mike Williams back, you get Keenan Allen back, things look a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, they literally replaced Keenan Allen, who's one of the most talented and prolific receivers of like the last 5 years. They replaced him with like an old kick returner.
Oh, you know, boy. You know,
that was the replacement plan. So yeah, shock of shocks. The offense looks a whole lot better. Herbert was great. That was just sort of a, you know, the full expression of what Herbert can be as an NFL quarterback. He was fantastic. Austin now up to 93 catches, and we got 4 weeks left in the, I believe I that 93 receptions is a record for a member of the Yahoo Fantasy team. I believe that is a record. And he's also creeping up on Christian McCaffrey's positional record for receptions. Like, he's got a really good shot at it at this point.
I know, and he hates it too. That's the best part, is like, he comes on this podcast like basically every week and is like, is decrying the fact that he's got to catch so many passes, right? Like, you know, he talks about, even this, I tweeted a clip last night from the show about how, you know, people talk about Justin Herbert's stats. Like, he basically is like, yeah, why do you think Herbert's stats are down? He's got to throw the ball to me a bunch. Which, again, it's just so funny when we parse these things out statistically in fantasy. And meanwhile, Austin's like, get the ball, like, get the catches off my plate. You know, not that he's trying to get responsibilities off his plate, but like, yeah, get those balls down the field. Right. So, yeah. But look, it just, I think as long as Mike Williams and Keenan Allen are out there, they're certainly every week fantasy starters. And it just makes a huge difference to go from, you know, goofballs like, especially, I mean, God love DeAndre Carter, but come on, man. Like, how about you stay on your feet on that fourth down call there? How about you don't?
Oh my gosh.
How about you run a route to the right depth once, please? But yeah, it's been a tough scene, a tough watch all year long for the Chargers offense. And again, it's not perfect. Still not a fan of their route combinations. Still not a fan of some of the stuff they do on offense. They certainly are never going to get like their full offensive line back because, you know, Rashawn Slater's out for the year, but. Man, it's just, this is much better when you have your pass. This offense asks a lot of its wide receivers and asks a lot of its quarterback. And when they have the wide receivers out there to do it, it looks a little bit better than when they don't.
Can I just toss in one additional thing on this game? And I didn't, again, I was at the bar watching this game, so I didn't appreciate it in real time until I got home and I saw the clips. That Armstead play where he like flips the ball backward out of the scrum.
I know.
To Tyreek Hill is one of the most impressive things that I've seen this season. That was incredible.
That's why you sign a veteran like Teron Armstead right there. I mean, yeah, no, I didn't realize it in real time, and I was like watching the game. So I didn't realize it until I think I saw Hayden Winks tweet the clip out this morning. I mean, wild stuff there, right? And of course, that's something you've immediately got people talking about, you know, from a fantasy perspective, like, I don't get the points for the yards. I only get the points for the touchdown. It's like, hey, wait now, friend, you better not be complaining about that. Okay.
Seriously, you benefit from that play. I don't want to hear a thing.
Don't want to hear it. Also points. Like, yeah, the one guy on the Dolphins who does a damn thing, right? you got plenty out of Tyreek Hill. I don't want to hear any complaining. This is an anti getting greedy podcast here, from a fantasy perspective, but all right. The take bowl is in the rearview mirror. Again, it's laughable coming out of that game that it was even like a discussion point. But I just hope that, again, I hope the Dolphins can figure out a counterpunch, because I love watching great offenses and great schemes. And I think the Dolphins have been a great offense and they've been a great scheme. But now we're going to get to see what the counterpunch is for Miami. And I do have a lot of faith in Mike McDaniel that he can come up with it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Mike McDaniel is such a likable coach so far. And, you know, obviously a gifted coach who's been waiting for a long time. And I have a fair amount of faith, obviously, in him and also in Tua. I mean, I think they've built a nice offense around Tua. And I think Tua, while he's not exactly, you know, no two quarterbacks share the exact same physical traits, like, they're different guys and they've built different systems around them. It's a couple bad weeks, but it doesn't mean that I don't think Tua can't possibly be massively successful in the NFL. I certainly think he can. I'm just sort of anxious to watch and see how they adjust, because they clearly have to adjust.
Yeah, I mean, this is a bad performance against a defense they should have exploited, but like, one game doesn't define an NFL quarterback. Just like you know, with any of these players, any NFL player, and I think Tua is certainly capable as well to adjust to this. And he has a lot of strengths as a player. They're just very different and less
Yes.
He's just less impressive than Justin Herbert, but that's fine. He can still be a good quarterback in his own right. Again, these guys don't all have to be compared to each other all the time. It was just obvious going into this one why that was going to be a discussion point. But all right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll run through the very exciting, enthralling waiver guys we have to add this week.
Searching for NBA playoff coverage? We've got you. The Old Man and the Three, presented by BMW, gives you an inside look into the world of sports. Hosted by former NBA sharpshooter and Duke legend J.J. Redick and sports writer Tommy Alter, The Old Man and the Three offers unprecedented access to the league. Tommy and J.J. discuss the NBA and interview some of the biggest names in the league, like Devin Booker and Luka Doncic. NBA final season is the perfect time to dive in, and you can listen to The Old Man and the Three wherever you get your podcasts. To hear episodes brought to you by BMW. Push the limits this NBA season with the brand that set the ultimate standard. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
All right, Andy, we're back. Little piece of breaking news right before we finish that Chargers recap. The Dallas Cowboys are making a veteran addition at wide receiver, Andy. Can you believe it? It's happening. They signed T.Y. Hilton.
Huh. Okay. I like T.Y. Hilton.
Yeah. Yeah, this is from Ian Rapoport, right before, again, like right during the middle of that Chargers segment. Not the veteran wide receiver anybody expected them to add. This definitely makes me think they probably aren't going to add Odell Beckham. But, I've been making this point now recently. I don't think this offense really needs, like, Odell Beckham. I don't think it needs T.Y. Hilton. Like, Noah Brown's giving him good play. And, you know, I rankled Gabe Davis and weirdly anti Josh Allen Twitter this morning, tweeting about like how these guys in Buffalo have not been great, of late. And I think it's a bunch of like I think it's a bunch of Jags beyond Stephon Diggs, to be honest. And somebody brought the point up like, oh man, what about the Dallas crew? Like Dak is basically doing the same. It's like, yeah, but I think Michael Gallup, like when he's healthy, is a legit number two receiver. I don't think Gabe Davis is that. So I don't know, not to do the Gabe Davis thing, but like the Cowboys have a pretty good supporting cast. I'm not 100% sure like T.Y. Hilton's going to come in here and handle a big role, much less do I know that he's even capable of that at this point.
Yeah. Michael Gallup has had an 1100 yard season, right? Like we've seen Michael Gallup.
We forget how good he is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy's had significant success in the NFL, and Gabe Davis is still a guy who's had some huge weeks, right? But it's more in the, I don't know, he's still kind of in the Will Fuller pile for me, right? Like we haven't seen him string together, month after month of high level performance.
All right. Well, that's enough of T.Y. Hilton. We'll see. I don't think he's going to have a big role. I don't think it's a thing worth talking about, but interesting signing nonetheless. Let's move right into the waiver guys this week, Andy. Let's talk running back here. We've got a Chiefs guy right at the top.
Yeah, just for the sake of having somebody actually like super interesting in this conversation, I wanted to lob Jerick McKinnon out there, in part because first of all, you probably can't get him in Yahoo. He's 62% rostered in Yahoo right now. He's been on rosters for a while in most of those leagues too. Obviously, he's coming off a terrific game. One of them was like one of the touchdowns that he scored, just an absolute improvisational miracle from Patrick Mahomes. But hey, he's going to play with Patrick Mahomes all year. That's life with the best quarterback in football. Finishes with over 100 receiving yards. He is obviously the primary receiving option out of the backfield, and it's just Pacheco and McKinnon. They got Houston next, so it's a great matchup. But he's, again, you probably can't get him in our platform, but just looking at some of the roster percentages elsewhere, like he's down around like 35% rostered in ESPN leagues. And to whatever extent people listen to this podcast who actually play on other platforms, he's much more widely available elsewhere. So he is a good name to throw out there. And I think he's probably, given the offensive environment in which he plays and some of the matchups coming up, they've got Houston, then they've got Seattle, and then they've got, Denver again, the team that they just, poured it on against. So he's got nothing but good matchups ahead. Any sort of PPR league, I think you got to have McKinnon on a roster.
I'm going to speculate that not all of our listeners are 100% Yahoo exclusive. I'm going to speculate that that's the case. So that's good stuff to bring that up there. Chuba Hubbard, we talked about earlier. He's the next guy on your list. And I mean, look, like I said, the Panthers want to establish the hell out of the run, and they're pulling it off.
Yeah, they are a team that is seemingly going to go into games wanting to run the ball 40, 45 times. You can't do that with one guy. So Deontay Foreman is still the primary running back there. And yet they've been able to feed Chuba Hubbard 17 touches in each of his last two games. And he really had a nice day against Seattle. Not a, you know, degree of difficulty matchup necessarily, but, you know, he goes over 90 total yards, scores a touchdown. And yeah, this is exactly what Carolina wants to be. Mentioned it earlier. I just always find it funny when like a guy plays a game, like a guy only plays like 23 snaps, but touches the ball almost every time he's on the field, which was the case for Hubbard. Like they're not trying to confuse you with what their intentions are to run the ball, or at least they were against Seattle. And it seems like it's going to be like that going forward. He's got Pittsburgh coming up, and that is, you know, kind of a middle of the pack run defense. And then he's got Detroit, and that's been a relatively friendly matchup all season. So the matchups aren't bad. The run's going to be in play in part because the Carolina won't have it any other way. So I think Hubbard is interesting. Like if you're listening to this and you're a playoff team, you're probably not going to be leaning on Chuba Hubbard, but it's, you know, it's worth talking about all the guys who are seeing this many touches.
Well, yeah, just on the off chance that, you know, Foreman, he had a foot problem coming into this week. If he gets hurt again or something, like, it, you know, I think Hubbard's probably, I don't know, maybe graduated to the flex with benefits type of category, right? Where you can play Chuba Hubbard and not feel totally embarrassed about it based on the workload that he's gotten the last couple of weeks in a good matchup. But also, yeah, Foreman goes down, then he's a guy that you would start with confidence. So yeah, you want, and speaking of which, the next three guys in your list are kind of in not in the flex with benefits category, but in the stash category here.
Yeah. You would absolutely not start any of these guys with confidence. I wanted to call attention to the fact that Alexander Mattison's roster percentage just goes down every week, which is not the way it's supposed to go this time of year, right? Like I get it. If you drafted him and you dropped him when, you know, you hit a messy bye week early in the season and like he couldn't help you because he wasn't starting, like I get that. But we are in the time of year where you want to fill your bench with lottery tickets. You want to fill your bench with guys. Like you should know what your starting lineup is, right? You're a good team. You've made the playoffs. You've had the last month or so to sort of figure out what your starting roster is going to be in December. And then the bench spots should be guys like Alexander Mattison, where like if, you know, yes, he's a contingent value guy, but if anything happens to Dalvin Cook, he's like, I mean, we've seen it in years past. Like he's a known quantity. He's going to be 100 yards and a touchdown, right? Like, and he can catch the ball. He's going to be like 95% of Dalvin Cook, which is great in fantasy. So this is exactly the type of player who should be on rosters right now. And I'm a little bit disappointed that he's not at like, you know, 70%, 75% rostered. I feel like guys like this should, you know, their roster percentage should be climbing this time of year, not going down, but in fact, it's going down. So that's a little disappointing. He's got the Colts. I mean, he's got these guys coming up. He's, you know, if all goes well and nothing happens to Dalvin Cook, then Madison won't be relevant. But if he becomes relevant, he's like a top 10 fantasy running back. Anyway, they've got the Colts coming up. They got the Giants. They got the Packers. These are friendly enough matchups. Yeah. So good slate of games if he falls into a workload. Tyler Algier, another name that I'll be writing about it just a little bit this week. He's 10 carries and like 55 yards every week. So that's not terribly exciting. But if anything were to happen to Cordarrelle Patterson, then the workload goes up a little bit and he gets a little bit more interesting. But he is definitely someone who already has a little bit of a role. So in a very deep league, you know, if you're in the sort of league where anybody getting 10 touches is relevant to you, then keep his name in mind. The other situation that I feel like we ought to hit on, and I don't have a good answer for it, is the Damian Pierce ankle injury. It seems like it's a low ankle issue, and maybe he'll be fine for the week ahead. Maybe there's nothing to worry about here. He's got Kansas City coming up. But he did try to come back into the Cowboys game, and he couldn't go. And they pulled him. The problem is when they pulled him, it was just, it's a little bit of Rex Burkhead, and it's a little bit of Eno Benjamin, who didn't do anything. Nobody did anything. And it's Daria Gumbawale, right? Like it was like a three-man weave, and nobody did anything for fantasy purposes. And I think Damian Pierce is a pretty unique talent there. So I probably wouldn't take a shot with anybody here. If I did, it would probably be like a $0 offer for Eno Benjamin.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's a lot of universes where I'd feel like, okay, even if I know Eno's the guy, I'm starting him against the Chiefs. I'm starting him against the Titans, you know, like, so I think you could probably stay away from that one. But I agree. If anyone's going to do anything, it would probably be Eno, who, you know, I still don't know why the Cardinals cut Eno Benjamin, but would love to find out at some point. Next group up here, wide receivers, certainly some intriguing names on this list.
Yeah, I think it has to start with DJ Chark, who's played, you know, these last three games. He has a couple of touchdowns in each of his last two games. He's gone over 90 receiving yards. He got deep against the Vikings, connected on a long touchdown with Jared Goff. Goff certainly playing very well right now. And this is just, you know, this is like three games in a row with serious target totals for Chark. He's found the end zone. He's been productive in each of them. This is also a situation where, like, the week 15 matchup is not ideal. It's the Jets. The Jets have been, you know, tough secondary, tough defensive front, like, tough everywhere. It's a good team. It's a little bit of a look ahead because the Lions have the Bears in week 17. So, you know, maybe you're a stacked team and there's no room for DJ Chark in championship week if you get there. But that is a golden matchup. That is a wonderful matchup. And it makes every Lions receiver certainly on the map. Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to go crazy in that one. And like, Chark is playing really well. I mean, Goff is distributing the ball to everybody. Everybody in a Lions uniform is getting targets right now. So I can't guarantee that it's going to be like a 12 target game, 14 target game. But he's playing so well. It's such a friendly matchup. It's, you know, you can afford to look ahead a little bit to the best possible matchups in title week. Other names that I think are interesting at receiver, we talked about Elijah Moore earlier, Corey Davis in the concussion protocol. Oh, Moore coming off a game with 10 targets. Like, you know, Mike White playing really well when he's healthy. So, and then you mentioned the schedule upcoming for the Jets. It's the Lions. It's the Jaguars. It's the Seahawks. Like, this is a really friendly slate of games. And if there's any chance that Elijah Moore is going to step into, you know, a half a dozen or more targets per game, he's really interesting to me. Mecole Hardman is probably coming back, if not this week, the following week. But there was some optimism, you know, last week that he could return from IR. And I just want to remind people that, like, he was a big chunk of the Chiefs goal line offense before he suffered the injury, right? He had like five touchdowns in the three games prior to hitting IR. So he's really interesting to me. And then a couple other names, both rookies, Jahan Dotson in the game before the bye against the Giants, saw nine targets, found the end zone again. It was a great game for him. And now he's got the Giants again coming back from the bye. And Alex Pierce is out there. I don't know if you can bank on a Colts receiver in the fantasy playoffs necessarily, but they do have the Vikings coming up. And that obviously a very good matchup.
Yeah, Alec Pierce against the Vikings, that is interesting. Can Matt Ryan actually get the ball a little bit more downfield than normal against a bad defense? Like, yeah, he's run into some tough defenses and tough pass rushes of late, obviously against the Steelers and the Cowboys, like in primetime slots. But I think Matt Ryan will still be starting for the Colts. Like, I don't think there's any need for them to go to Sam Ellinger again or something like that. So, that Pierce one's pretty interesting. But I like all those receivers there. It's going to be hilarious when Mecole Hardman is back and plays and Kadarius Toney still doesn't play. That will be pretty hilarious. All right, quarterbacks, Andy. We talked about a few of these guys on the show already, but run through them here.
Yeah, who am I to stop you from adding Brock Purdy at this point? It's an incredible story.
You have been fully converted from like a big-time skeptic on Thursday to a true believer.
Yeah, I mean, that's a trait that I feel like you have to have if you work in sports generally, and certainly if you're a fantasy analyst. Like, I don't know, you get new information, you got to change your mind, right? Like, this is two really good games that Brock Purdy has played. I was no fan of his as a college player and saw a lot of him. You know, he couldn't beat Iowa to save his life, but he again, there he was, absolutely demolishing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady. Like, what a world. And, you know, the guy's been aggressive. He's not, you know, he's certainly not afraid of the moment. Like, he's met this moment in a huge way, and he's obviously been coached up, and he's the guy who gets to throw to Brandon Ayuk and Kittle and McCaffrey. So it's clearly a great situation. He's got Seattle coming up on Thursday. again, the one thing with Purdy right now, he's got the oblique injury. It seems like it's going to be fine. But, you know, that's obviously a thing to monitor. But really fun story, fun situation to tie yourself to. And then two other guys at quarterback, obviously Mike White, assuming he's going to be good to go after just getting crushed time and again by the Bills. Things really open up schedule wise for them. It's Detroit, it's Jacksonville, it's Seattle. Those are friendly spots. The guy's averaging over 300 passing yards per game this year, and he gets to throw to Garrett Wilson. Like, that's a really good situation. If I have to add a third here, it's probably going to be Ryan Tannehill. It's probably not going to be Baker Mayfield. It's probably going to be Tannehill. He's headed into what could be a bit of a shootout against the Chargers. They allowed him to throw the ball 38 times last week in a comeback effort against Jacksonville. Doesn't happen very often for Tannehill. He's not a volume guy. And hopefully he gets Treylon Burks back. If he does, then he's got some weapons.
Yeah, no doubt. Speaking of Ryan Tannehill's weapons, in tight end, Chig Okonkwo, I'm such an idiot. I picked him up off waivers and then forgot about it, and I didn't start him over Dawson Knox on that T. Higgins team, and I probably would have won if I just played old Okonkwo. But man, I mean, the guy's been unbelievable of late.
Yeah, it's, you know, again, it's a low volume passing offense generally, but this is 16 targets for him over the last three games. So it's not like, you know, it's not like a single week in which he just happened to spike. Dalton was all over him in the preview podcast last week. Yeah. Shout out to Dalton. Good call. Finishes with a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. There's no path here for him to, you know, he's not going to see 12 targets. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to be the centerpiece of the offense or anything like that. But, you know, again, friendly spot coming up against the Chargers. So he's definitely somebody that I think you can take a look at. Two other tight ends. Well, really
Houston
one
the week
tight
after
end.
Too, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like really, really good spots for him. I also want to mention Taysom Hill. Because he's fun to talk about. He's weird. I don't really know what he is in real life. Is he a running back? Is he a tight end? Is he a little bit of a quarterback? He's all these things. He's whatever you need in any given moment. He has 8 combined touchdowns on the year. It wasn't all in that Seattle game. Like, he's done other things. He has 5 rushing touchdowns. He has 2 receiving touchdowns. He has a passing touchdown. If you think of him primarily as a rushing threat, he's got Atlanta and Cleveland coming up, right? Like, if he's getting, I don't know, a half dozen carries in each of these games, and those carries are occurring near the goal line, some of them, like, he's a really good bet to score in each of the next 2 weeks. So I think Taysom Hill is super interesting. Is he a little bit of a cheat code? Sure. But I think he's interesting right now. And just because I feel like I should include a third name here, I'll just mention that Tyler Conklin has been targeted 15 times in the last 2 weeks. Hadn't done anything with him. But he's tied to the Mike White experience, and that's pretty good.
Yeah, and that schedule that we keep talking about, pretty good there. All right, let's move on to our drops and our hold on loosely candidates. I'll get us started on drops here. We talked about Tyler Boyd, the injury up the top. I think go ahead and you can cut Tyler Boyd. I mean, obviously it's more aggressive to cut a guy like Deebo Samuel, but I'm with you that I think he's a guy you can drop. We're probably not going to see him the rest of the regular season, but yeah, I mean, Boyd, look, like, he hasn't been doing that much anyways. I think he's he's over his skis if he's asked to be a wide receiver too. Like, when T. Higgins was out, was the wide receiver one, and Chase was out, you don't really want Tyler Boyd doing that stuff anyways. But now, if he's going to miss a couple weeks, just go ahead and drop him, because you're never going to feel good about starting him anyway. So definitely, like, it's pretty interesting, like, lack of supporting cast, a lot of injuries there for the Bengals with Joe Burrow. But yeah, I think Boyd, you can go ahead and get rid of him.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. He's not, you know, a player of the caliber that you should really wait for, right? Like, if he's available next week, fine. But, like, I wouldn't. This is not the type of player that you stash for a couple weeks, hoping that he comes back well. My guys are almost any Raven. And I see him on the most dropped list right now, right? Like, There was a moment there where it seemed like they were going to try to build the entire offense around DeMarcus Robinson. He had like 3 quick catches right out of the gate, but then almost nothing the rest of the game. Devin Duvernay, nothing. Kenyon Drake isn't relevant anymore. Justice Hill isn't relevant anymore, right? Like, I you know, we haven't talked about J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards. Dobbins had a great game, but also looked, you know, like, he's lacking a gear or two. You know, had the long run that he couldn't finish where he almost seemed to pull up. So I don't think he's like fully operational J.K. Dobbins just yet, But he did handle a big workload, and the numbers were there in the end. So I think almost any, you know, outside of Lamar and Andrews and, you know, J.K. Dobbins, you can cut virtually any Raven.
Yeah, Gus Edwards was like making his way into some of the start sit questions on FFL Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, man, if J.K. Dobbins is back there, like this offense is not in a theoretical world, you can get these two guys firing at the peak of their powers, but like nothing. I mean, it is crazy how nothing has gone right for the Ravens offense this year. Yeah. You know, I mentioned earlier I was tweeting about like the Bills guys this morning, and I at least got a few Ravens fans like, yeah, that's cute that Gabe Davis isn't what he was cracked up to be. That's cute that Isaiah McKenzie is like a Jag or whatever. Why don't you come look at what we're dealing with over here? And it's like, I get it, bro. It's possible to say one thing is not that good and also acknowledge that, yes, what you are dealing with is legitimate. I mean, it's horrifying. The Ravens offensive roster right now, especially without Lamar, is horrifying. And like these guys that were supposed to be centerpieces have all dealt with injuries. Dobbins didn't come back the way they thought. Bateman out for the year. Mark Andrews has certainly been banged up all year long. I mean, yeah, it's a horrific scene over there for Baltimore. Let's just get that straight.
Yeah, the names are all terrible, and you'll feel better about your roster if you even without a corresponding ad, just drop some of these guys. You'll feel better.
Get a defensive streamer for a couple of weeks from now. Yeah, why don't you just go ahead and do that. And that's better than having DeMarcus Robinson or Devin Duvernay on your roster. All right, hold on loosely, candidates, Andy. You've got an interesting one here that people have been barking up your tree about.
Yeah, I didn't think we'd have to talk about Mike Evans in this segment in particular, but I actually, you know, I do a regular hit in Miami on Mondays, and I had somebody ask, is it time to drop Mike Evans? And at some level, I get it, right? Man hasn't scored a touchdown since like week four.
Right.
The best play he's had all season was negated by penalty just this past week, right? Like he finally connects with Tom Brady on a long touchdown and they call it back. We've been waiting for that all year. He's obviously been out of sync with Brady all year. He himself, his hands have not been like fully functional this year. He's dropped some balls. Brutal year for Evans. He is still coming off 9 targets. He is still Mike Evans. That like he has that whole history behind him. He's still a wonderful red zone target. Like I don't know if you're in an 8-team league and you only start 2 receivers, maybe he's droppable, but he's still gonna rank as a top 24 wide receiver for me. He's not a circle of trust guy anymore. There are some rookies that I have well ahead of him right now. I have Godwin well ahead of him right now and have for the past few weeks. But I think for most of you, he's not yet a drop.
If he crams 2 TDs in against the Bengals or Cardinals the next couple of games, or God forbid the Panthers on January 1st, like you would be 0% surprised, right? Like,
yeah, not at all surprising. I mean, the guy had a million touchdowns last year, right? And he's a wonderful red zone target. So like if his season corrects over the next 4 weeks, that wouldn't be a bit surprising.
By the way, just because Dalton's not going to be on the pod this week, Dalton's not going to be on the pod this week. And we're talking about Mike Evans. You know, Andy, Dalton and I have a lunch bet on who scores more fantasy points between Mike Evans and Gabe Davis. I don't know if you know this, but Gabe Davis, 124.6, Mike Evans, 128. Evans is wide receiver 22 and Gabe Davis is wide receiver 23. It's like there are actually no winners here because neither of these guys have been like great fans. It's not like, oh, you tailed Harmon and you got Mike Evans. Great stuff. You tailed Dalton. You got Gabe Davis. Great stuff. Like there are no winners here, but it's hilarious how close it is.
Does week 18 count? Is this like the one thing you're going to have on the line in week 18?
Oh my God. I guess I have to clear that up with Dalton. We didn't specifically say it, just like who scores more fantasy points. My God. If Gabe Davis, for whatever reason, goes ham in week 18, I'm going to lose it.
Either one of these guys totally saving their season stat line in week 18. It just feels so right to me. So I would clarify.
I think it should. Well, listen, because Mike Evans gets the Falcons in week 18, I think it should count. And the Bucs will certainly probably play for more week 18.
That's a good call.
Now, you know what? I'm not going to clarify this with him. But again, he's not on the pod this week. So I'm going to sit here and assume week 18 counts just based on, look, it was never specified.
Yeah, if I had the judge wig here. Season. If I had the judge wig here, I would bang the gavel right now and rule in your favor.
Oh, well, then that's all I need to know. If that's what you say. My guy, hold on, Lucy, guys. I put George Pickens, Steelers players here. I know Pickens has had a frustrating last couple weeks. Like, oh, the squeaky wheel narrative for George Pickens ends up being like, oh, he gets 78 yards or something. And that, by the way, is like an eruption game in the Steelers offense. So just you got to take that victory when you can. The schedule's pretty good for the Steelers, though. They get the Panthers this week. Their defense is the better unit of the two operations there in Carolina, but still gettable. They get the Raiders on Christmas Eve. Yeah. I mean, my God, like that could be a big Pickens game. Maybe Deontay Johnson finally scores a touchdown against the Raiders. And then the Ravens, like, again, we've seen that their cornerback group can be exposed. Again, this eruption spot, 78 yards did occur against the Ravens. So there still might be interesting. There still might be some interesting moments here for Pickens and spots you might use him.
Yeah, it should be well established at this point that I can't really quit George Pickens. I love him. I'm resigned to the fact that it's probably going to, you know, we're probably not going to see George Pickens really have a blow up in any meaningful way until next season. But I want to be attached to it. I am pretty deeply invested in this player.
Yeah, with the context of it's the Steelers offense, you got your blow up game when Deontay Johnson actually had 80 plus yards and George Pickens had 78 yards. Like that is an eruption spot. Anyways, let's just do our Treviso Babes update and get out of here, man. There's really not much to say. These ladies are not making any crazy drops, and at this point, like, crazy drops are to be expected, right? Like we're telling people to drop Deebo Samuel, Tyler Boyd, stuff like that. So there's really nothing crazy to report out of the Treviso Babes. I mean, Taysom Hill's been added. Denise, you're in last place and adding Taysom Hill. That's a tough scene. That's when things are not good.
Yeah, that's a little bit controversial, but I mean, I suppose I appreciate somebody who just wants to, you know, run through the tape, finish out the season on a high note. But I would just say, you know, maybe because these women have not been through it before, like if you're out of it, you're in the consolation bracket. Maybe don't place waiver claims. Maybe let the playoff team sort that out.
To be fair,
there's no last place punishment here, right?
Not that I'm aware of. It was a free agent ad, not a waiver ad. Look, the other people had the grand opportunity to pick up Taysom Hill, and Denise is just getting ahead of it here, dropping Corey Davis on Monday morning to add Taysom Hill. So yeah, I get that. But just update on my mom's team. She took a loss this week. I'm hoping Ramondre Stevenson on Barb's team just goes crazy tonight so that I don't have to feel bad that like my -4 points from the Tennessee Titans, my recommendation on my mom's streaming defense this week during her hellacious bye week run ends up costing her the week. But talk about somebody who's frustrated with Mike Evans. I think Mike Evans might be my mom's least favorite player, unfortunately.
And this is a four teams make the playoff setup, right? So,
four teams make the playoffs. So we've got a couple of weeks to go here. God, I have no idea how four weeks. The playoffs are, what, like week 16?
So we've got
17.
One week remaining in the regular season for your mom. So next week, surely a must win week.
Got to win next week. Again, a lot of guys are coming off bye week for her, so that's good to see. But yes, it will be coming down to the end here because she'll drop to 8-6 this week. And old Barb, I mean, she just beat her. She might be jumping her in the standings. Julie, she might be jumping her in the standings. You never know, man. I mean, this is going to come down to the end here in the Treviso Babes League. But was hoping for a better week 14 performance from my mother's fantasy team. We didn't get it. So tough scene. Barb and Julie, they're the ones we got to watch out for, plucking that fourth spot here for my mom.
I feel like we got to get a camera on Bev for week 15 for the emotional roller coaster that this is going to be.
Oh man, I don't think I'm ready. I don't think emotionally I'm ready for that. So we'll see what happens here. Good luck to my mom. Good luck to all of the Treviso Babes as they continue to make their fantasy championship push. Leslie's about to run away with this team, this league, dude. She's gonna go to 11-3. She won again last week. Leslie's the champ, bro. She's already, apparently, my mom says Leslie's already like, oh, I don't know if I'll play next year. Maybe I'll just be a coach, you know, I'm like, hey, you got anything can happen. One game elimination, Leslie. Don't rest on your
going out on top.
Quick.
Going out on top. Yeah. I've mastered this thing. There's nothing else you people can teach me. I've won. I'm out.
No, that's the way to do it. All right. That is going to do it from us. You can follow Andy on Twitter at Andy Behrens if you don't already. You can follow me on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB. And while you're there, make yourself a better fantasy player and improve your timeline by following at Yahoo Fantasy. Austin Eckler, key of the fourth down conversion touchdown. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about the thrilling and stressful win over the Miami Dolphins. Until then, we're out.